longer. I sort of skipped lunch to go watch airplanes today. Listen, when you're in St. Martin, that's sort of what you do.
It's all you do.
Yeah.
I think that's the only thing. I mean, I might go in the water for a little bit because it looks nice.
Oh, the water was great. It was really hot. Not really hot, but it was like in mid-80s.
Mm.
So, like, you watch a couple planes land, you run down, jump in the water, cool off, go back up, dry your hands off, pick your camera back up. Hope there's not too much salt in the lens when you're done.
Yeah. You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. Let's talk about Qatar and the absolute mess that Qatar is right now.
I feel a little bad that we don't have the producer on board to debate the pronunciation thereof. But
Qatar. I'll say it. Qatar.
Yeah, bit of a mess going on right now.
And it doesn't seem like there's any real resolution anytime soon.
No, it doesn't. Did you hear that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, what was that? Was it an A340 landing or something?
I don't know. I'm sitting at the Royal Sonesta Maho Beach in St. Martin, sort of overlooking the water here. I'm just far enough off that I didn't see it out the window, but I've been watching planes land all day.
So. That was a big one.
Yeah, let's see if I can figure out what just landed while we're talking here. But it's been the Qatar situation is a mess, just absolute mess. Yep. And there's they got basically the other Gulf countries all cut them off for the most part, wholly isolated them, and you've now got there's like one lane in and out for air traffic because Bahrain controls the surrounding airspace.
Yep.
That's typically used. So there's basically nothing available. They have no other options. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's fun to watch on flight radar if you like. Just the line narrow it down. I mean, it's like two lines of aircraft, one up and over Iran and the other like up and over Bahrain and kind of out and back towards like India and stuff to avoid the Emirates and stuff.
So you can't fly over Saudi Arabia. They can't fly over the United Arab Emirates. They can't fly over, with the exception of this one super narrow space, Bahrain.
Yep.
It's a significant adverse effect, shall we say, on the operations. What's interesting to me is only a couple routes are actually not able to operate without a tech stop.
I saw
like Sao Paulo or something.
Yeah, Sao Paulo had a stop in Athens or Rome.
Yeah. Okay. But like most of the flights are able to operate, which I find interesting. Just goes to show, and even like some of the super, super long ones like Auckland seems to be doing it still. So, maybe that was interesting to me, but no, it's maybe that's also could be based on loads. But the flip side of it is someone wrote a story the other day saying like, oh my God, the Doha airport is empty. Look how significant the impact of this issue, this blockade is. And it was based on being there at a time when there aren't really any Qatar flights anyways. So, yay.
Do you think, also in place now is a naval blockade. And since Qatar gets most of their food from Saudi Arabia, Iran has been flying some modified 747 cargo planes in with food. How sustainable is that? I mean, you could just, it's like an airlift. I mean, Berlin got by with that.
Right. ask the allies in the 50s or 60s, but like not, I think is the answer.
Yeah.
It would be surprising to me if there's the political will to continue it at that pace in a way. And a couple 747s isn't going to be enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
The challenging part to me, the hard part for me to sort of get over is the people who are going to get screwed are the migrant workers in Qatar.
Yep.
They're the ones that can't afford for the prices of food to go up. They're the ones that if medical supplies start coming short at the public, facilities, they're going to, which in, Qatar has spectacular, facilities. But if those start to go away and you start to get limited, these are the people who are going to be affected. So it's that part kind of sucks.
Yeah. And I've had a few people ask me, you know, how should they feel about traveling? You know, should they feel safe traveling through Qatar, or, you know, should they just reroute their trip? I don't think there's anything that's unsafe necessarily, unless things deteriorated, unless the situation deteriorated.
Yeah, I think right now there's definitely no safety risk from flight operations. I mean, this is one of those, right? Like, we've told you where to fly and they are flying there. So the plane, I don't think there's been any legit threat of military action.
Yeah.
But, you know, keep your eyes open, obviously, but I wouldn't shy away from it at this point. I think one of the interesting things to me is just sort of trying to figure out, like, there's a lot of Egyptians who work at Qatar Airways.
Yeah.
It's actually an interesting thing I saw today. There's a lot of mixed families, mm-hmm. Qatari and Emirati families. And some of the new, like, Emirati rules are basically, if you show support for the Qatari government, country, whatever, you can be arrested.
Hmm.
Like, don't wear your whichever football jerseys have the Qatar logo on them, right? Like, there's all these sort of things. But then someone's like, some Qataris were being expelled from these countries. You weren't allowed to go in, and Qataris aren't allowed to transit. You're not, if you have a Qatari passport, you're not supposed to be able to fly on Emirates Airlines, even if it's not from Doha.
Hmm.
Like, there's all these things going on. And then someone's like, what about the people that are, like, married and live here? And so they're coming up. I don't know what the exception that was made was, but I saw something today. Basically, like, there has been a ruling, call this phone number if you have questions. So
weird.
Yeah. Geopolitics.
Yeah. It's nuts. Nuts. Speaking of ultra long haul flights, since we were talking about, Doha to Sao Paulo, United kind of announced a somewhat random route. They're going to start flying, Los Angeles to Singapore nonstop. And as part of that, they're going to kill their Fifth Freedom flight from Hong Kong to Singapore. It's a weird development, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's arguably right. This is one of those things. Singapore Air did used to run that route. They ran LA and Newark.
Yep.
Before they had to retire their 345s because they were flying gas cans in an era where gas was way too expensive to make it work. Putting the 787 on it, United already launched San Francisco. Singapore had already intimated that they were going to launch LA and New York again and maybe a third city, and then did launch San Francisco in response to United. So there's got to be some demand to make that work.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is what the demand is in terms of sort of onward flow in the United States side, mm-hmm. to make it happen. Right. Singapore's got all the feed from everywhere on Asia that they can flow through that route, either to LA or San Francisco. United, especially at LA, sort of has cut back,
yep.
over the years, right? It's not it's a hub, but it's not a huge hub operation.
Yep.
So limited sort of connecting points and this and that, but also strong, you know, business and Asian ties in the LA area. So I guess they've run the numbers and think they can make it work. Obviously it's 787. So if you're doing it in coach, that's a tight squeeze. Good luck.
Yeah. You know, what I find kind of curious about the whole thing is, I guess part of it is you can connect to New York, on PS. So kind of keeping the lie flat seats and business service. So one stopping to New York on United. Which you could do through San Francisco.
Sure, but you could already have done that through San Francisco, right?
Yeah, but it just offers you a second option. The other piece I don't really get is why kill the Fifth Freedom flight when you could connect? That flight essentially connected to all the Hong Kong U.S. flights, so Chicago, Newark, and San Francisco. Why kill that off?
I mean, In I think the real answer is because it's expensive to operate, not necessarily from an aircraft utilization, but like crew.
Mm.
It's you basically put, it becomes goes from, you know, a 3-day trip to a 5-day trip kind of thing. You have to overnight a crew, although they have a Hong Kong base, so maybe not. But I think crew is part of it. And then the other part of it is if you're for the people going to Chicago or New York,
mm-hmm.
right, which are the other two options out of Hong Kong, now they have a one stop still.
Yeah.
Yep. So you can do that. You do have some opportunities to theoretically adjust flight times. Right. I mean, that depends on slots and things like that. But does that mean you adjust some of the departure times out of Hong Kong, or do you do more maintenance there? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It also could do with aircraft utilization. And even if you're leaving a plane on the ground in Hong Kong for longer, you know, for that same time that it's not flying onward, whether it's a maintenance thing or different types of aircraft end up there.
Mm. Yep.
Right. I mean, maybe. Or you stagger things like there's an arrival and a quick departure to a different city. I don't know. I haven't looked at the schedules and everything enough to know exactly how it would work. But also, like, I mean, you know, they say planes don't make money unless they're flying, but that doesn't mean they always need to always be flying. Sometimes you actually stand a plane down.
Yeah.
The flight times on that United onward to Singapore were crappy. It was always being sold as a super cheap, you know, for the local market. And so if you can kill off some of the, you know, kill off the need to fly that by connecting your people elsewhere, that does help. You know, it does suck for a Dulles or Chicago or New York kind of people. The connections via LA and San Francisco are, it's longer flight routes because you go sort of off the Great Circle path. More than you would with the shorter hop at the end there. So it's a little slower, and it may push some people other directions, but I was surprised by it also in that I don't think United has I'm surprised that United has enough feed at LA to do it, but I'm not surprised that, you know, LA Singapore is coming back. I'm surprised it's United.
Yeah. I'm surprised it's United, and I'm surprised that, they see this route as fitting unless part of their plan, like we've talked before, is to grow LA again. And I mean, I know Foz would probably say where. I'm going to play Foz's advocate. Where are they going to grow? But I think eventually the terminal will get big enough and they'll have enough gates and will, you know, get those, planes there for connections. I mean, they've kind of mentioned, I think with Alaska kind of attacking the West Coast, I think United is going to have to bolster their West Coast presence a little bit more. Just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to have to be some of that. I still wonder, is LA the right place to do that, and how and where, and what are you going to come up with? Like, are you going to start adding more feeder flights back out of LA?
I say they come to Portland and start a bunch of nonstop Asia flights out of here, and I'll be a happy man.
Yeah. So about that.
Another West Coast hub. But like I mentioned earlier, there's also some PS changes coming, right? Like, so LA to Newark and San Francisco to Newark are the existing PS markets, and that name's actually being dropped, right?
Right. Officially, yes. I'm not going to drop it because it's the only way I know
to distinguish it.
distinguish everything. But yeah, they're renaming it something. I don't even know if it has a real name anymore. But and they're adding San Francisco, Boston.
Yep.
And that's to follow on JetBlue, and then Delta followed, and now United's following. So they'll get all the flatbed, including some 777s, actually, I think. Yep. The domestic one, but they're getting 777s during the summer season at least. But also, Economy Plus now gets hot food.
Ooh, nice. Is that in line? That's in line with Delta, right?
Right. And I actually think Delta gives everybody an economy meals now on their transcons. Yeah. So in some ways, I feel like this is a little bit of me too, but almost.
Yeah.
Right, not actually quite getting there, which is annoying to like see that happen.
Yeah, they could have done more.
Yeah, but you know, the flip side is JetBlue doesn't give anybody food. So and still food for purchase. So it's somewhere in the middle. Even on JetBlue's even more space, there's not hot food on transcons yet. So it is in the middle, but
yeah,
it sort of becomes a question of who are they trying to compete with and what's their goal. And it does not appear that they're going after the top notch. They're going for middle ground, which for better or worse seems to sort of be United's MO these days.
Yeah, it seems like the leadership has this goal of not necessarily exceeding the competition, just kind of they're happy to be part of the competition.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny is when it comes to things like the business class seat.
Yeah,
I've always actually supported that approach. I don't think they're ever going to be global industry leader. Certainly, they were relatively early towards all flatbeds, and then the other folks caught up. And so, right, you run into a generational problem of like first gen, second gen, who's really winning.
Yep.
But and right, anyone when you already had most of the planes with flatbeds, and then someone comes out with a better flatbed, everybody's going to be pissed that you didn't have the better one. But you did have these other beds for a long period of time, so it's easy to be mad, but you know, important to remember that you did have something that was at one point was in fact better. But I don't know. It's an interesting sort of situation to me in terms of what are they trying to do to sort of keep up and to make the right impression, and where are they going? And every now and then a little innovation, and maybe you could argue the new Polaris seat is innovation.
Yeah.
Turns out that they only own the US exclusivity on that seat. Look for it coming soon to Air France.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow. Holy day.
So that was an interesting negotiation. I mean, also, you know, maybe look for it coming soon if Zodiac can start manufacturing them. Although the backlog of parked planes seems to be clearing. I think they've only got one parked anymore.
Yeah, Foz and I saw the one getting painted here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wonder about United's position there and like good enough versus good.
Yeah, I don't think they need to be the industry leader in flatbed seats or anything like
that.
No. But I do think they need to be innovative when it comes to customer innovations or customer satisfaction in the soft product and just customer service and things. I think if they actually distinguish themselves in those ways, that to me is what resonates with people. Like if you don't mention a bad thing about an airline, that's a good thing.
Like that's, yeah, completely agree. And especially what also makes it surprising to me is, you know, if you go back to Kirby's sort of statements in recent months, it's been about doubling down on domestic market and some spaces where they should have been growing better and, you know, realizing their quote natural share, unquote, whatever the hell that is. But I think that that level of the discussion and talking, that it's been a lot of talk about that sort of thing. And part of it is putting the planes on the routes. Part of it is actually operating them reliably, which we know United has struggled with for some time. But part of it is also like having nice people to do it.
Yeah. Yep.
And having a product on board that maybe not is the best, but is, it's got to be competitive. And, you know, that's where it's, and I don't know, this like sort of new transcon food thing is a little bit of like, it's definitely not the best. Is it competitive? I guess for some people, I don't know. It's a little weird. I get the differentiation of trying to make E plus, you know, include more and justify people paying for it. Right? Ancillary revenue is basically the you know, what Wall Street demands at this point.
Yeah, you know, that's since you bring that up, we could talk about that a little bit. I think there's a little bit of a misconception about what people are expecting. You know, people, if you actually look at like CEO pay, a lot of the times pay is low, but the bonuses and the dividends and the stock options are enormous. So when people say, oh, they're trying to please Wall Street, like the CEOs and people like Kirby, that I think that's true, but they're only trying to do that because it increases their take home pay, right?
That's a fair point. I mean, it also means they get to keep their job.
Well, true. But I'm saying, like, if you have a $100 million year versus a $600 million year, that's a lot of money in your pocket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think there's a lot of personal motivation in that people don't necessarily recognize when they talk about revenues and profits and where the stocks are. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know why I said that. I think it was just on my mind recently. I was reading some articles about this, like CEOs really, you know, people think, oh, they're trying to please Wall Street and keep everybody happy.
Yeah.
They're also trying to keep themselves pleased.
I don't know. I kind of look at the Dave Barger situation at JetBlue a couple of years ago, where he was eventually pushed out, and the stock was doing okay. I don't think he was suffering for how much he was taken home. Right. At some level, if I'm taking home $20 million or $40 million in stock at the end of the year, is that really
– yeah.
Does that affect anything? And right, I've never had that much money, so maybe it does. When you have that much money, maybe that does make a difference in how you live. But I don't know.
Yep. Yep. Makes sense. I mean, I get you. The other thing that we could talk about, speaking of economy products, and I have a few points on the end of this, is they were during the recent earnings call, right? Was it the quarterly earnings? Was that what it was?
Probably.
They talked about uptake in
the economy plus sales. Yeah.
The economy plus sales.
Excuse me. Not economy plus. Basic economy upsells.
Yep. Yep. And what was the number they presented? 30% is the uptake on basic economy.
Right? So what he said and how it was interpreted, and I was one of the people doing the interpretation who's apparently screwed this up. And then what was published later in the report seems to differ. And what he actually said is 30% of people consider a basic economy seat. Like, they click on that price. Mm. And then they're shown the, are you sure this is a bad idea, warning screens. Mm-hmm. And many of them changed their mind. But they didn't get a specific number of how many changed their mind. So it's not that 30% of all passengers are flying in basic economy tickets.
Gotcha.
That number seemed high to me at the time, and I wrote the story anyways, and so I need to go back and fix that. But it's still like 30% of the people are looking at it and then buying up. That's still, you know, it's still a lot of people, right? That's what they count as the sort of incremental win of basic economy in terms of their revenue and justifying the segmentation of the product and how that's benefiting the bottom line. So,
yeah. Yeah. You and I had this discussion kind of offline, and I posted something about it on Twitter a little bit. I think the overall basic economy concept, I know what I'm looking for, when I'm buying tickets, but the inability to distinguish it in OTAs for the most part is specifically Google Flights, which is my go-to OTA at this point, is irritating. Not just for United, but for Delta too. Like, you could buy a fare and it doesn't show you till the end that it's a basic economy fare, which for me, and there's no way to filter it out. So I know I never want to buy one of these. And so I'm hoping we'll see some improvements as these become more common, but I have my doubts that we will.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those things that at least in the past, I was always able to filter them out on Google Flights, and we were going back and forth with someone on Twitter. There is a way to exclude them in sort of general GDS parlance.
Yeah.
So there are options for that. The way Google Flights presents them is also a little weird. It doesn't call them outright basic economy. It says, like, this fare comes with fees for bags or something like that. It's like it's a sort of a weird, sort of stilted kind of presentation of what it is. So, you know, I don't think it's – and maybe it is, but I'm not sure it's quite explicit enough in terms of the what really can and can't be done with them
and
such. But.
And I had another discussion with Jason Rabinowitz, a friend of the show, Jason Rabinowitz, about this as well, because I was saying my mom was confused. My mom was going to buy some tickets on United, and she was like, well, it says it's basic economy. She's like, it's $30 cheaper each way, but I have to pay for bags. She's like, but I'm going to have to pay for bags anyway. And she's like, so do I buy this? And I'm like, well, you don't get to choose your seats. And she's like, oh, well, she's traveling with her parents, my grandparents.
Yeah.
And she wants to be able to sit by them. I'm like, so is that worth $30, Mom? You know,
it's 100, right? It's three.
Yeah, exactly. And so is that worth $100? Probably, you know, I mean, if you don't want them scattered through the back of the plane. And so there's just this, I don't think it is explicit enough as to what you are losing. And I don't think it's clear to people that, hey, the upsell is clear, but the, what you're getting with the base fare isn't necessarily clear. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. I mean, and I have to remember that I know what the things, what the warnings mean, so it probably biases my view on it.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, there are warnings, and I'm sure it says it in there, like you will not have a scene signed until you get to the airport.
Yep.
But you know, does everybody read all of it? I mean, it's big and it's bold letters and whatever, but does everybody read it? No. Do people?
Well, and I think what threw her
process
off,
it, yeah.
What threw her off, I think, was it's presented in this box, and then just below it, it says Economy Plus and Economy. It says Economy Plus Essentials and Economy Plus something else. And she's like, "Well,
yeah.
do I have to buy this, or is this?"
Oh, so they're doing the double upsell. They, instead of basic, they want you to go ahead and just buy Economy Plus, not yeah. just take a regular seat. Yeah, that's kind of.
And dirty. So she was just really confused about that, and so I had to like go through and try to like click through. And see what she was seeing. And
yeah.
like, okay, Mom, you just got to read the big yellow box. Don't worry, the orange box. Don't worry about anything else. Just read that orange box and make your decision based on that. And then otherwise, just go back and buy the economy, regular economy ticket, not economy, you know, basic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. But that's interesting about the numbers, the uptake numbers. Yeah. I mean, maybe enough people are reading it that they're seeing that it's not the best deal for them.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned the, like, well, I have to pay for bags anyways thing, right? Like, I like to think most people don't check a bag, but for people who do, like, is this really a disincentive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're going on a cruise.
If it was just her, if she was just coming up to see you, like, she's, you know, doesn't matter, does it really matter what seat she's going to get? Like, you're going to get the seat map, it's going to be a shitty seat in the back anyways.
Yep.
Yep. Maybe you do save the $30 because you're going to pay the same $25 to check a bag.
Yep. And they're going on a cruise, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Someone shared with me, and I haven't written about it, but Lufthansa Group, I think, has changed bag fees that if you book through a third party, paid check bags cost more.
What?
I think it's like a €5 surcharge. So, like I said, at €25 to check a bag, it's 30.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, I haven't. I need to double check and read the details on that. I'll find it. Maybe I shouldn't have talked about it now, but it was caught my. I triggered something in my brain.
Definitely interesting because I mean that's kind of like a snuff, you know, stuff your nose up to the OTAs.
Yeah,
you're kind of saying screw you guys, we'll do it ourselves.
Yeah, and it's got to be confusing for a passenger. Like, how much does it cost to check a bag? And you're thinking about the numbers, and it's like, wait a minute, it was €20 last time, and now it's 30, but then next time it's 20 again, and what the, huh? Woo-hoo?
Exactly.
Like, I can see, you know, when you start getting into some of this sort of moving target pricing of stuff, it gets pretty frustrating in a hurry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. Let me see what else I had here. Hang on one second. Emotional support animals. And the mauling of a Delta passenger.
Yeah, those pictures were scary.
Yeah, you know.
Like, bit in the face.
And the reading the story, I read the Business Insider take because it was short and sweet, and that's all I cared about.
Lines and Destinations, a deeply researched and useful insight operation.
From Business Insider. that's what I'm reading now. I read the full take on it earlier, but.
Yeah.
So it was an emotional support dog, was not a working service animal. So there is a distinction there.
Right.
And it was a lab mix, which is interesting because it's around 50 pounds and was seated in the lap of the owner. Also weird.
That's typically how you – I mean, that's how you have to carry them.
In the lap? I mean, I usually see them like on the floor, but I guess that is when they're actual service animals.
I thought service animals are on the floor and emotional support animals are in laps. Maybe not.
I mean, I guess if it's an emotional support pig, you would definitely want that in your lap or something. I don't know. But yeah, so this dog just went after this guy in the window seat. And it messed him really up. I feel bad for him. I mean, it's dog bite. It has to be terrifying. Essentially getting mauled in your face. So what do you think this means for emotional support animals? Are we going to see more?
Right. This is one of those things where I feel like every time something happens, like maybe this will be the event that triggers real rules. And eventually I stop playing Charlie Brown with the football and assume that Lucy's just going to pull it away every time and we're all screwed. But I also, is that an analogy too old? Do people get that anymore?
I get it.
Sure, but you're almost as old as me. So anyway, kids these days. This is one of those situations when you read the backstory, like it seems like the guy had a reasonable justification for having a service animal.
Yeah. Yeah. PTSD.
Yeah. And so like, this is one of those where like, I don't want to say, oh God, it's just someone abusing the system so he can get to fly with his pet. I don't think it's that, but you still have a situation where whether the dog wasn't trained right or something else happened. And then like you have a 50-pound dog that's like big and in this confined space and snaps. And then what do you do? And like, you really like, you're kind of screwed at that point. You have to try to control it, but I mean, there's not a lot of opportunity. There's no space to move. Like, you know, maybe the guy sitting, you know, this is one of the, like, maybe like the rock, you know, put his foot down and hit the guy's, the dog's tail or something. And it just flipped. I mean, or like what, any sort of thing could happen.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, like, you know, and so it's a really, this is one of those that surprisingly, I sort of surprised myself of not just immediately, you know, going on another rant, but, it is a situation where I feel like we still need better control over what's going on with animals on planes. But when you have people who legitimately need them, you know, there are legitimate needs. And so maybe they need to be better trained. Maybe there needs to be something else going on. Maybe you have to buy a seat and give them more room. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, this was bad.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, we kind of had this discussion with Mr. Traeger when we were in London. You know, I don't
last
think.
Episode.
Yeah, and we kind of did it off. We were off recording then, but
It was not last episode.
But as we spoke to him, you know, they have a dog, and he is always he's never flown with the dog as an emotional support animal because there are people who genuinely need an emotional support animal, suffer with things like anxiety, PTSD, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to limit their ability to do these things and have the support that they need to fly. But at the same time, you don't want someone getting mauled on an airplane. And we have to remember that these are animals. They're not human beings. They don't react the same way. You never know. So it's tough. I actually kind of like the idea of maybe buying a seat or, you know, having a weight restriction. That would help.
Yeah. And I mean, right. It's also like our parrots and pigs and whatever is also right. Like, do you limit on breed or type of animal and stuff like that? And it's, again, I could see the answers going both ways,
mm-hmm.
right? If you tell me like, my emotional support animal is too big. Like, who are you to decide that? It's the animal that keeps me comfortable, but there are like, you have to have it in public and other people have to interact and be around it. So there's got to be some give and take, I feel like, is all right. And like many things in life, there's got to be a compromise somewhere.
I will be bringing my emotional support Shetland pony on my next flight.
Haven't we seen those?
We have. There's a miniature pony that's a support animal. Few of them, actually.
Yeah.
They're actually very good.
No, good.
Horses are very calming to people, so for some reason.
Hmm.
Good to know. So says my wife. Lastly, let's talk about IATA.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were in Cancun, so, lucky man.
I was out in Cancun for the IATA general meeting, I guess, last week by the time this airs, beginning of June. And it was interesting. There is – every year there's a – for at least five or six now, there's a panel of CEOs that's chaired by Richard Quest of CNN fame.
Yay.
And you know what? He actually does a good job in this panel. I find him weird and slightly challenging to listen to in many occasions, but when it comes to asking questions on this panel discussion the past few years, I have been impressed at his willingness to actually ask real questions.
Oh,
and when
good.
People try to avoid them, say, no, I asked you a question, please answer it.
That's good.
And he's got these men, unfortunately, you know, typically all men, but he's got these guys up on stage in front of all their peers. And even when they try to sort of avoid it, they're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of have to. So not surprisingly, well, somewhat surprisingly, Oscar Munoz was on the panel. Not surprisingly, that was the first question asked, was not what happened with Dr. Dao, but how do you get past that and fix the culture that lets that happen?
You're speaking of the incident where he was dragged off the plane.
The guy was dragged off the plane, right.
Okay.
Then on that Chicago to Columbus, Dayton, somewhere in Ohio. And so Oscar Munoz had two interesting statements. One was he 100% defended his position of saying he supports his employees and them doing the right thing. Quote, I think his quote was something to the fact, like, I will go to my grave believing that was the right thing to say. So, because he caught a lot of flack late in the day about that. But the other part of the conversation that was really interesting to me was there was a lot of talk about social media, you know, things go viral so fast, you have to stay ahead of it, you have to respond immediately, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. One of the CEOs was like, oh, well, I would respond in 10. If something like that happened, I would have a response out in 10 minutes. And Richard Quest rightly countered with, you're not going to even know what happened within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
How are you going to get like a reporting structure that something like that can get back up the chain of command fast enough that you know that it's happening, that you have to be able to put a statement out that fast? And Oscar Munoz had a response that I thought was really, really interesting. And I actually have a recording of it. The quality is not spectacular, but listen to it here for a second.
Oscar, this is a very different way of responding to incidents than most of you have brought up with in terms of your various industries in the past, isn't it? This idea of the social media response, which puts an onus on the chief executive much greater than before. This is going to be a little controversial. I think you have more time than you think to respond to this and to respond correctly. The escalation aspect that you mentioned before, I think, is critically important. Our incident in United happened on a Sunday night at 9 p.m. It didn't break in the news till 10 p.m. in Louisville. So during the course of the evening, it had scaled up to quite some degree, and then it really began to take off, to your point. So I was well past outside of my 15 minutes. So advice that I would give you, I think it's important, as Peter said, if you know the facts and you're responding to anything, do so immediately. But if you don't, and the time's already expired, then you need to take your time, because the force on me, the many different folks advising me from all different departments and areas, was wide and varied. But around it was the sense of the requirement that you need to do this now. And I think if I had just waited for another X amount of time, I think my initial response would be, my name on it would have been different.
And so what he's saying there is essentially, yes, you have to respond quickly, but it's probably more important to respond correctly than quickly. And, you know, he says it point blank. He had so many people telling him, you got to get a response out, you got to get a response out, you got to get a response out. And he put out a response. And we've all said this, I think, you know, I said it many times. I think we sort of all agreed with it in the original recording. That first statement that came out with his name on it,
yep,
didn't sound like him. And it was shitty.
Yep, it's terrible.
Point blank shitty. And he clearly acknowledges that. And, you know, his sort of statement there is, I was faced with all this pressure to get an answer out. But also, it was already 12 hours later. Another 10 minutes wasn't going to kill us.
Yeah.
12 hours later. And so, you know, maybe that's just you've conceded defeat to viral media. And so then once you've conceded defeat on that, you know, does it really matter at all? Or, you know, the slightly more optimistic version of it is getting a statement out and getting the answer right really does matter.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think that's interesting.
Well, and it's always kind of been, I think there's people who advocate for, oh, United didn't respond fast enough to this incident. But then again, it's not like Oscar Munoz is working the check-in desk. So if you expect corporate relations folks to handle things quickly, it has to be a realistic version of quick. Like,
yeah, you know, there's also like, there were one of the other, the Malaysian Airlines CEO was also on this panel and told a story. They had a flight out of Sydney. He told a couple stories. One was like a flight out of Sydney that was coming up and someone went batshit on board and they had to divert and go back to Sydney. But they were slow enough when it happened that people still had cell service and were live streaming, like this guy running around the plane crazy.
Jeez.
So that created some challenges. But also there was another, they had an incident with a plane coming across from India, hit turbulence and people got injured or something like that. I think something happened on a flight coming in that did make it to Kuala Lumpur. And when the plane landed, the executives were all there. Right. He left his office in the terminal and helped greet the passengers arrive and explain to them what happened and like helped, you know, sort of soothe the savage beast, as it were. He helped diffuse the situation on the ground and make people understand that management really didn't know what was going on and management really was working on it. Really easy to do when you're a single hub airline and your operations offices are at the airport. Or very nearby.
Yep.
You know, arguably, you know, Munoz lives in Chicago and the Dow incident happened in Chicago. Could he have, like, raced out there to defuse it late on a random holiday Sunday night kind of thing? I guess so, but that's, like, completely unreasonable expectation. So, I don't know. To me, it's interesting in terms of just what can be done, what should be done kind of dichotomy.
Yep. Yep, I agree. I think quick responses... in general, I mean, it's a good idea, right, to have a quick response. You want to be on top of things. But if the response is not genuine or solving the issue or, you know, explaining the issue or apologizing or whatever it is, then it's the wrong way to do things.
And I'm just going back to U.S. carriers because those are the ones, obviously, we're more familiar with. But, like, we've seen – award chart changes or, frequent flyer program changes or route changes, things like that. Sometimes the social media team hasn't been briefed.
Yep.
Right. And that's bad business. But I'm trying to remember now, there was one that came out, American did something and American strictly believes that in theory, you reply to every mention on Twitter and they were copy pasting the hell out of, you know, we thank you for your loyalty. Thank you for your loyalty, blah, blah, blah. Like, dude, like it comes off as tone deaf.
Yep. Absolutely.
And that's one of those like, great, you replied and you made the situation worse.
Yep.
But if, you know, that one of the various people out there who score airlines based on responses to social media inquiries sees that they replied and they did it quickly. So I guess, you know, it must be doing something right. I don't know. It's just one of those.
That's weird.
Quality versus quantity kind of problems.
That's weird logic.
Yeah.
Anyway, anything else? You're down in St. Martin.
I'm in St. Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in St. Martin. There's a Caribbean Aviation Conference. Maho Beach is amazing. I got to watch the KLM A330 land today. I missed the TUI 787 because I had bad data, so shame on me.
Darn.
But, yeah, I got some good video, I think. Got some good pictures. You'll see those online at various points. Highly recommend coming and visiting.
I have not been.
Highly recommend.
I should come.
Yeah. We talked about this a couple years ago when I was down here for a similar event, trying to put together a sort of AvGeek adventure kind of thing with Winair, who flies the local hops out of here. Try to put together like a couple day tour. I'm going to talk to them again this trip, maybe try to resurrect that idea. I think there's some cool opportunities.
Dots, lines, and destinations, Caribbean adventure.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
We got to figure out, you know, the hard part is the pricing, obviously, but there's the Sonesta Resort right by the airport. It's walkable. I walked it today. Oh. It's like a 15-minute walk from the terminal down to Maho Beach or the hotel. Hang out, drink beer on the beach and watch the planes land, go fly with Winair to, like, all the other different islands. Ceiba, which is the shortest commercial runway paved operating in the world right now. Right, it's like 1,000 or 1,200 feet. It's crazy.
We should totally do that.
And it just won. The award will be presented at the show this week, which will have already happened by the time, and it's already been awarded. So I'm not like breaking any secrets here, but most scenic approach, because it is like you're flying over the water, and it's gorgeous. You know, it's a low flight just because it's a quick short hop, but the routing is fly towards that mountain just before you hit it. Turn left and slam down on the runway.
Wow, that's great.
It's a runway that's at an angle, like relative to the flat Earth, or not the flat Earth, but to being flat on Earth, and has steep cliff drops at both ends. There's very little room for mistakes. You can go to there, you can go to St. Barth's, which has an incredible, challenging runway with swirling winds and sort of two mountains at the one end of the field that you sort of duck between. And then Dominica and Statia, and there's a bunch of fun little airfields around here. So trying to put together a, like, sit on the beach for a day with beer and then go fly around for a day and hit all these little islands, you know, lunch on St. Barth's, breakfast in Saba, lunch on St. Barth's, and dinner in Statia kind of idiocy.
It sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, so price is always the problem, and, you know, convincing them that I'm crazy but in a good way can be challenging. But we're going to talk about it again, so maybe look out for that. If that's something that might interest you as one of our listeners, let us know. It might motivate me to pursue it more aggressively if I know people actually think I'm serious. So.
Yeah, if we can get like some solid numbers too to give to WinAir, that helps as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
Anywho.
Well, man, have a good rest of your trip.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, you can find us on Twitter at DotsLines, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment, leave us a review. You can also check out the Patreon page and leave a donation if you'd like. Thanks for listening, and happy flying. Bye-bye.
Take care.